Cleve, how can you rule out the experimenter in this?
Well, you can't. In
you
fact, that's
right?
a very important aspect. The experimenter can really contaminate the experiment.
Or he could even be the result of the experiment. Have you found a way to rule that out?
Well, the only way that I've been able to do it is to totally automate the experiment and have a programmer that actually executes the whole experiment, and I leave the lab at the time it's going on.
And then what?
Well, then I can...
I mean in terms of result.
Well, I can get a real indication of things that are going on in the lab that aren't disturbed by human consciousness.
Yes, sir. But in terms of the randomness of when the experiment is done, do you still get the same result?
Well, in fact, you get a better result because you're getting a pure tracing without the distractions of human consciousness.
Uh-huh. So that would eliminate the experimenter from the equation. You feel you successfully did that?
Yes. In fact, the initial experiment that I published before I went public with this thing involved the automated dropping of brine shrimp in simmering water at one end of the lab.
Yes.
At the other, in several different rooms, there were plants attached to each to a separate polygraph. And I found that earlier I'd observed very much that plants were very much attuned to the death of any kind of life form in the lab, insects, things of that nature.
Really?
And so when I designed that experiment, I chose brine shrimp to stay out of trouble with the anti-vivisectionist kind of people.
So is the bottom line of this that everything is apparently or seemingly connected to everything, or is it things in more proximity, Cleve, that are connected to each other?
Proximity isn't a requirement. It's on a need-to-know basis. In other words, there's an attunement, and once there is a reason for the communication to continue, it continues over vast distances.
Once there is a reason for the communication, and the reason for the communication could only be, I think, proximity, right?
The initial proximity. Right.
Okay. Then that might explain why twins, for example, separated by continents halfway around the world, can identify times when things happen.
That
sort of
logical explanation.
Uh-huh. But there has to be a preliminary physical near connection, and then there's some other connection that's maintained.
Right. This has been my experience, at least, that, in other words, a lot of my work, you'll see as you progress through the book, it leads up to that testing of human cells in vitro. And when the human cells are left in my lab, some of the work, I was getting reaction from the donor over a distance of 300 miles.
Wow. It may be that distance and time, I don't suppose... Now, here's one for you, Cleve. Have you been able to, in any way, approach measuring the speed of the communication?
Well, I've come to the conclusion, after really trying to explore this, that there is no time consumed, because now we're getting into quantum physics and non-locality. Because non-locality does not involve time consumption or distance limitation.
Right. So, no time. In other words, the speed of thought or occurrence or simultaneous quantum whatever is just instant.
Instantaneously, right. And when I've talked to quantum physicists about this, I said, well, gee whiz, once you start saying that there's any frequency, frequency takes time.
Yes, indeed.
And if you start to expand that beyond a local distance and say, well, how long does it take something on the other side of the universe to become aware of something going on here?
Yes.
As far as quantum, the quantum theory is concerned. And they said 0 seconds instead of thousands of light years.
So I understand that you're not, I guess, a quantum physicist. But
no, not at all.
But I would like to understand. I mean, I guess I understand the speed of light. And I understand that we're not supposed to be able to break that speed of light.
That's the going theory, yes.
But quantum communication clearly appears to do that.
Yes, there's a Bell theorem they seem to cite a lot in non-locality that talks about atoms that are spun in certain directions, and the direction changes over a distance, and one mimics the other, even though the distance is in between.
That's a concept I just can't grab, how that communication is occurring outside of everything physical on this earth and beyond.
Well, you know, I don't grasp it either. I was so happy that the quantum physicists came along to give me some support. Because, you know, people would ask me, would you please define this communication? And I'd say, whoa, as long as I've been doing the research in this field, the only way I've stayed out of trouble is not to try to explain the nature of the communication as far as the scientific community is concerned. I said, I can give you hundreds of high-quality observations, but once I try to give you a faulty explanation, then you throw out my good observations.
Well, you're absolutely cautious and correct to do that, and that's exactly what they would do, because there's no good answer to that right now, is there?
Right. Well, when you get into quantum physics, they seem to have delved into it a good bit, but even among physicists, there's a lot of, you know, lots of discussion and conflict sometimes.
Well, that's because it has to cut right across everything we know about physics and say there's something about everything we know that's totally wrong at some level, at the quantum level, maybe.
Well, this is one of the problems. You have whole bodies of information that is threatened by some of these new concepts.